El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
World famous Phil Henry show here till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's Truth is Our Bitch time here. And we were just watching Margaret and Bud are here. Robert, you're into hockey, right?
Well, you'd be into hockey. There's no black people in it.
Yeah, there's black people in it.
There's black people that play hockey, Bud. What are you, stupid or something?
What are you talking about?
There's black people that play hockey. So don't give me that crap. It's a sport that now encompasses all racial, economic, ethno peoples, you know.
What do you mean ethno peoples?
You know what I mean. I mean it's no longer a universal sport. It's a very very much a cosmopolitan, metropolitan, Neapolitan.
Well, that's ice cream.
Yeah, that's an ice cream.
It may be an ice cream, but for my purpose, Neapolitan, never mind, man. It's a lot of people play it. Grant Fuhr, remember Grant Fuhr, the great goalie of the Edmonton Oilers, was the goalie during their five damn Stanley Cups, man. So, as I was saying, what is it with you, man?
Well, just you're asking Robert.
I know about hockey, man, but I don't like it that much.
I don't like hockey either. I mean, I'm not that I don't like hockey. I mean, it's okay, but I only get into it during playoff time. There's too much other stuff happening, and the other stuff that's happening I'm more interested in, like, and it ain't basketball either. I've gotten into that English soccer, which, you know, for better or for worse, I'm into it. And I just read an article on soccer the other night about which team I'm supposed to. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. But the Chicago Blackhawks win in overtime 4-3 over the Boston Bruins.
What about now? Here's an interesting question.
What?
What do they mean, Bruins?
Yes, because there is a Bruins.
UCLA Bruins are different from the Boston Bruins, and the reason why they can have, just to anticipate your question.
Yeah, I want to know why they get to have both names.
Because you can have both names, because the Boston Bruins claimed it, UCLA claimed it, and there is no patent or copyright, as far as I know, on the term Bruin, which is a, to anticipate your confused look, Robert, it's a bear.
Oh, so a Bruin is a bear?
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
I thought a Bruin, was some sort of a weather system.
Yeah, that's what I thought, like a tornado.
No, 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 it's not.
Yeah, Bruin, not like a gale?
No, it's not a gale.
Well, I know you're saying it's not weather, but somebody said it was like choppy seas and a gale-force wind.
Choppy seas and a what?
A gale-force wind and choppy seas, as if you were in a squall. But it's a little bit larger than a squall.
Yeah. Yeah, squall, a Bruin, water spout, and...
Yeah, and then what else?
Well, it'd be like a hurricane.
No, a Bruin is not a weather system. I'm telling you right now, it's a bear.
Like a Smokey the Bear.
Like one in a forest.
Yes, that's what a Bruin is. Where did you get a weather system?
Well, I was always taught, not always taught, but Bud was telling me.
Since when do you believe him? You're always putting him down and saying he's an idiot. Since when do you believe him?
I understand him to say, if I can finish.
Go ahead.
There are water spouts. I don't know, Bud. You know it.
Yeah, there's a water spout, then a Bruin.
No, that's not what you said to me. You said there's a squall, then there's a Bruin, and then water spouts. Are you kidding me?
What's so funny?
What's funny? I can't believe you guys don't know. Yeah, a Bruin's a bear. What kind of bear? I don't know. A big one? A little one? I think it's a sort of a smaller bear. You have bears, and then you have Bruins.
Then you got what?
Then you got like a ground squirrel.
Then you have a ground squirrel, yes. You have bear, Bruin, ground squirrel. Anyway, the Boston Bruins is what I'm trying to get to. The Boston Bruins, and on Phil TV, there are the relative logos of the teams. On the left is the Boston Bruin logo. And as you can see...
Yeah, see, that's got nothing to do with a bear and more to do with a water spout.
That looks more like a weather system.
What that is it looks like the spokes of a wheel. B with the spokes. Is it a Bruin? No, but it's not... And on the right is the Blackhawk.
That's like a smiling Indian.
What's he smiling about?
The Blackhawk is smiling because he's happy to represent the Chicago hockey team. Otherwise, he'd probably be pretty pissed off and sick to his stomach about everything else. But, you know. And in the middle there is the Stanley Cup, which, as you know, they award to the champion team in the National Hockey League. And the team gets to keep that cup. And there's some really interesting stories about the Stanley Cup, where it's been, what it's been through. Because the teams get to keep this trophy.
Well, that the same trophy, or they make a duplicate?
No, the same trophy. They get to have that trophy. Now, I think, and I could be wrong, after the year that they have the trophy, or however long they have it, they give it back to the league because the league has to give it to another team. But I think in its place, the teams have different plaques. Well, they have what do you call them?
Like a banner.
The banner. They lower the banner at the stadium, and that is signifies their Stanley Cup championship. But the actual Stanley Cup only stays with the team for as long as they are the champions. And there have been stories down to the years, to the very, very early years of the National Hockey League, or the early years of the Stanley Cup.
What is it named after?
It's named after a guy named Stanley.
Who?
I don't know. Lord Stanley, Duke Stanley, Count Stanley, Duke Ellington.
Well, is he? Was he English?
I think he was. I think he's a guy that gave him the cup. Anyway, so one of the early teams that won the Stanley Cup, they got so hammered one night. It was right after they won, and they were champions, and they were celebrating, and they're on the train, and they're getting drunk, and they're throwing crap out the window, and guys are naked, and, you know, and they left it in a train station. They left it on the platform.
They forgot it.
Yeah, they forgot that they left the Stanley Cup, and I don't know how they got it back, but they did get it back. There have been stories of it being thrown out of the window of a hotel. There have been stories of it being held for ransom. You know, people have stolen it. There have been stories of it being used mistakenly as an ashtray or a spittoon. Most recently, I think that happened down in Anaheim. I'm joking.
Well, I don't think, when you talk about Los Angeles and the Los Angeles area, I don't think you're going to find too many people that treat this Stanley Cup, as you call it, Phil, and obviously not for me, but for those who are aficionados of hockey, this is, I think what you're saying, this is an exalted symbol.
Yes.
All right. And so, as such, should be treated that way.
I would think so, yeah.
All right. So when you give it to a team in Anaheim, my God.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I just don't...
Well, I was kidding about it being used as a spittoon in Anaheim.
No, but the ashtray.
I'm joking about that. It wasn't used as an ashtray. They had it in a mall down in Anaheim, and I think everybody walked by it and thought it was... Well, that's interesting. What is that? They thought it was a piece of furniture or something. So anyway, there is the story. The first game of the National Hockey League Stanley Cup playoffs. It is taken by the Chicago Blackhawks 4-3 triple overtime. One holy hell of a game, which we're checking at the tail end of here on Phil TV. And of course, we're on at 9:15. We begin we begin streaming Phil TV earlier, but at 9:15 is when we go with our pre-show, and you are all invited to be with us. Later on in the show tonight, did we have a return visit? Lloyd Bonafide is coming back to visit us on our program this evening. I'm not exactly sure why, but I do think that he was the subject, I think, of a flashback. Talking about, I think, I forget which one. Which was the flashback that we did with him?
Well, I got to look it up.
We've got a flashback with Lloyd Bonafide either today or yesterday. And he's going to be on our program. That is our classic flashback on our website. He's going to be on our program tonight, the Korean War veteran. We also did a trivia question involving Lloyd. But I think that was all yesterday. Oh, well, check us out at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Get a hold of all of those classic podcasts. Get a hold of the daily podcast. Get a hold of 5,000 hours of archive material. Get a hold of just take a hold of it, grab it, and never let it go, man. And we'll be right back. 877-876-PHIL, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
What about a Bruin?
What about a Bruin, man?
World famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL and online at philhenryshow.com. We've got Ken Holmbrick. Ken is with National News out of Montreal, Canada, and we want to talk to him about the Stanley Cup. Ken, how you doing? The Stanley Cup is how old?
Well, the Stanley Cup was commissioned in 1892 as the Dominion Hockey Challenge Cup.
The Dominion, what is it?
The Dominion Hockey Challenge Cup is named for Lord Stanley Preston, you know, and then he was then the Governor General of Canada. He awarded to Canada's top-ranking amateur ice hockey club, which the entire Stanley family, you know, was supported, you know.
Does it have anything that, Mr. Holmbeck, this is Bud Dickman.
Yeah, Bud.
It doesn't have anything to do with Stanley Steamer.
The Stanley Steamer is the car?
Yeah, or the people at Steam Clean.
Well, that's ridiculous, Bud.
But why are you asking that question?
No, it's okay. You can ask the question if you want to.
Well, it had to do with Stanley Steamer.
No, it does. As far as I'm concerned, is that I know it's not got anything to do with the Stanley Steamer, which I think was a car.
Yeah, that was a car. Mr. Holmbeck was a car.
Yes, it was a car, the Stanley Steamer.
Yeah, it ran on steam.
Yeah, it would run on steam. That's why they call it the Stanley Steamer, I guess. I was not aware of that, but there's any connection there.
All right, let's get back to the questions here.
What's wrong with that one?
It's fine. It's just, all right, so...
Well, it's a valid question, you know.
Okay, all right.
What about Stan Laurel?
Will you shut up with these questions, bud?
No, it's not good. It's not have to do with Stan Laurel. I can assure you that, my friend.
Okay. So go ahead. The history of the Stanley Cup. I was telling Dan during the break, if you look at the Stanley Cup, it has a band of... It used to be much smaller, right?
Yeah, the Stanley Cup was much shorter. They added 1, 2, 3, 4. It looks like a 5 bands to the bottom of the Stanley Cup. On the Stanley Cup were the names of the championship teams and the names of the players of the championship teams. They first awarded this cup was in 1893, you know, so you've had a lot of names that go on the Stanley Cup. It's a very venerated name.
And the teams keep the cup for the year, Ken. And then let me ask you this, because...
Yeah, what happens if they lose it?
If they lose it, well, but that would be a bad thing. I think they're going to owe some people some money, you know.
Well, it is a good question, Ken. What does happen if they lose the cup?
Let's put it in a realistic context. Suppose it gets stolen.
Yes, if it is stolen, or I think at one time you said it was, or Phil said it was held for ransom.
Oh, yeah, there have been different times that the Stanley Cup has been held for ransom. Well, not held for ransom. There have been times that the Stanley Cup, you know, has been, damaged, you know, and has come to... there's been some close calls, I guess. If the Stanley Cup is ever lost or is it stolen or is damaged beyond repair, let's say.
Yeah, like what if a train ran it over?
If a train ran it over, well, I guess you'd have had the pancake of Stanley Cup.
Well, I mean, what would happen if they did?
If they did, you'd have to talk to the commissioner of the National Hockey League, I think.
So really, seriously, what happens... So the National Hockey League on a case-by-case basis?
Well, I think that the teams, of course, are not indemnified. They are held responsible for the safety of the cup, the return of the cup, because the cup belongs to the National Hockey League, and by extension, belongs to all of the clubs in the National Hockey League. So that if the club, if the cup gets damaged, they're going to want to exact some payment, I think. The clubs are going to have to take insurance.
How much do you think the cup is worth?
Oh, I don't know. It's got to be millions and millions of dollars.
They ever get a guy down there to look at it and see how much it costs?
Did they ever get a guy down there to do what?
Well, a guy who's going to look at it.
What he means is, has it been appraised?
Oh, sure. The stomach has been appraised. I don't know for how much, but they have it insured. And I think you have to understand, since 1914, the cup has been... won a combined 94 times by 18 active NHL teams and five defunct teams. So prior to that, the Challenge Cup was held by 9 different teams, but the Montreal Canadiens, they won the cup 24 times. They're currently the last Canadian-based team in the NHL to win the cup after winning in 1993. The Stanley Cup has not been awarded to a Canadian-based team then. In 1919, there was a Spanish flu epidemic, so they did not award it then. In 2005, they had the lockout. They did not award it then.
Yeah, what's that got to do with if they lose it?
No, I'm just telling you some of the challenges, you know, the...
Well, the flu epidemic after World War One, obviously, that they didn't even have a season. You're talking about the lockout. We all remember that. I didn't know that Montreal, it hadn't even occurred to me that the last Canadian-based team was Montreal to win it.
Right, as bring it back, but it doesn't make any difference because there's Canadian players, and I don't think anybody gives two hoots and a holler, you know, about that.
All right, so the Cup has always been safe, and no one's ever lost it. Let me ask you a question. Is it the Stanley Cup is a you know it's an award given to teams in the National Hockey League, most of which are American teams. The Canadian fan doesn't really get hung up on that, do they?
I don't know. You know, in Canada they like to follow the Canadian teams, and it was great, you know, to see a Phoenix came back to Winnipeg. You know,
right.
And everybody was in favor of that, and because Phoenix is a great town, but it's a little bit of a joke, you know, to say I'm going to go down to Phoenix and cook alive, you know.
Yeah, Dad, they're even going to keep the ice from melting.
Well, the ice is indoors, you know.
Yeah, but it's an indoor arena.
Well.
No, no, that's indoors. So the ice, you know, you can turn.
Yeah, probably keep it cool indoors, right?
Yeah, they keep it indoors, keep it cool. And...
But what about if the ice is going to melt? What do they do?
Well, if it's going what?
Hold on for a minute. What do you care, bud? What are you talking about?
Think about it, melted ice.
If the ice melts on the surface?
Yeah.
Well, there's something wrong with the plumbing or the coil that keep it cool, the refrigerator to freeze, you know.
What country are you from?
What?
Yeah, what country? You got an accent.
He's from Quebec, okay?
Why are they asking? I apologize, Ken. Why are you asking these questions?
We were told by Mr. Hall.
Well, I come from Canada.
Yeah, but you don't sound like it. Because the guy I know from Canada sounds like...
Would you hold on for a minute and get David on the line, please?
What?
Would you get David on the line? I want to talk to him. Okay, so what we're talking about then, Ken, is the... is that David?
Yes.
Hey, David.
What's going on?
What is with these guys asking questions here?
I told them that they're part of the show to get to ask questions. They can handle a few questions. What's wrong?
They're asking my guest. Hold on, Ken, okay?
Yeah, sure.
They're asking him whether ice melts.
Yeah, that's all right. They can ask that because I think it brings it down to the level where we want the show to be. I think the show is getting, it gets a lot of conversation that's way up there in the air, man. You get it way up there in the sky, you know, with all of these kinds of concepts. I want it right down there in the street. So to that end, I want Bud and I want Robert, and I say this with great respect, Bud and Robert, I want some conversation that's pretty, you know, that's way down there, you know, for a dumb, with the dumb, you know, God bless our dumb people, but the dummies.
Yeah, the dumb guy can understand.
God bless our dumb people.
Yes, don't play it that hard, Phil, okay? When I've been listening to this, you call me up. I got Daphne here. She's happy for the first time because we got a big, fat... What'd we get, honey? Tell him. We got a half gallon of Moose Tracks, so she's happy. So all I'm asking you is just let them... How much time you got?
We got a minute.
Don't talk to me.
All right, go ahead.
No, I can answer the question, Phil.
No, go ahead, bud.
Yeah, I want to know when that ice melts, how much ice do you got to make?
Well, you have to make about 3 inches of ice is all that it is.
What's underneath that?
It's all concrete, or it's a solid floor, you know. But there's no need to, you know, have any more than that.
Yeah, I thought there's more ice than that, like about as deep as a swimming pool.
No, 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 it's not swimming pool deep, it's just that.
Okay, so what happens,
never mind, okay?
Well, what were you going to ask?
What happens if the doors are open, if the air conditioning goes out or gets too hot?
Then it melts.
Yeah, then the ice is going to melt, you know.
And what country you say you're from?
I come from Canada.
What part?
I come from Quebec.
Where's that?
Well, it's,
Never. It's near Ontario. Thank you very much, Ken, okay?
Yeah, I gotta know where Quebec is.
It's right next to Ontario, and it's, you know, it's north of New York State.
North of New York State. I'll look it up.
Yeah, you look that up.
All right, thanks a lot, Ken. So who told you guys you could ask all this dumbass stuff?
David told us he wanted it down on dumb, on a not dumbass. He said I wanted the man, like a...
Yeah, what's the dumb guy in the street?
He wants the dumb guy in the street perspective. Is that it?
Yeah.
What happens if the ice melts? Where's Quebec? Where are you from? Why were you asking him if he's from another country?
He is from another country.
I mean, why were you asking him what country he was from?
Does he come from another country?
What? You guys know he's from Canada.
No, it didn't sound like he's from Canada. It sounded like he come from, like, Denmark or something.
Denmark. All right, we'll be right back. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Steven Spielberg, struggling filmmaker. Next. What?
You guys sound like he come from Denmark.
Yeah, I heard you the first time.
Phil Hendry. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Warren Benman is a frequent contributor on our program. Warren was seriously injured a number of years ago working as a maintenance contractor for a variety of radio stations. He fell from a scaffolding quite high, some 4.5 stories high off of a broadcast tower, and was injured on his way down. Apparently, you know the story, Margaret?
Well, he hit every one of, and I shouldn't say this, but apparently people on the ground that witnessed this said that on the way down he hit every one of these support beams, these metal girders.
Yeah,
on the way down. So it wasn't, it just wasn't pretty. There was no way of spinning it so that it would come out something you could laugh about or enjoy. It also is unfortunate that while it did affect his speech, it did not keep him from playing some amateur hockey in the Northeast after that. And Warren joins us on our newsmaker line because, Warren, you have some of the Stanley Cup history that we do want to speak about. But first of all, I want to talk to you about your experience playing hockey. And how are you this evening, dear?
Oh, I'm doing good, Mark. Good to be on.
Yes, and
I just want people to know, Warren, we can understand you. Sometimes you may be a little difficult to understand, but if that's the case, we may restate some of the things you say.
No, I'm totally understand. You should do that.
Warren, where did you play your amateur hockey?
I played in northeastern Pennsylvania and skated to Ohio, too.
In Ohio?
Yeah.
And what position did you play?
Well, I was playing defenseman a couple times and goalie.
Did you get hit with a puck a lot?
Yeah, I got hit a lot of times. Until the butt end of a stick, the guy beat it in my head. But one of the things I didn't force me as a goon.
So you were a goon. Phil, you know what a goon is.
Yeah, the goon is generally a big defenseman who is out there to just either...
I can do it, Phil, because you're taking your time doing it. And it
no, I know what it is.
No, but it's okay. I would basically be the bodyguard of a lot of great players we had. And that particular time, playing in the Ohio Oil Drum League. And
what was the name of the league?
That was the Ohio Oil Rust Oil Drum League.
The Ohio Oil Drum League, was that the same team that had the Bernacki Lancers or the Lancettes?
Yeah, they had a guy team was called the Bernacki Lancers, and the lady team was the Lancettes.
Yeah, I remember Lancettes, man. They kicked ass. They beat some men teams.
They had a women's hockey team that beat men teams?
Yeah, the Lancettes did, because they're pretty big girls, and they were able to kick ass.
Okay, you said you got your head beat in. Is that why you have some speech problems?
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it added to it, but it is the fact that the goon fell off the thing.
Yeah, you fell off about four stories.
Who am I talking to right now?
Bud Dickman?
Well, it's people like the two people that kind of have a conversation for people.
But sorry.
Yeah, just you and Margaret and stuff, I'm talking to Dickman.
Why, what, you think I'm a dumbass?
Sometimes.
Yeah, you're the guy that's all beat.
Shut up, bud. All right. So, Warren, tell me about the National Hockey League Stanley Cup. You know an interesting story, don't you?
I do, Phil. In 1905, the Cup spent the night on the Rideau Canal in Ottawa. The Ottawa team had been presenting the Cup. And what if it's one of its members?
All I got was boo-boo.
Tell you what, we'll tell that story.
Bye, I think I'd do it good.
No, you're not doing it good at all, man. So I want to let you go.
Oh, yeah, sure. You treat me like I'm a slobber.
Well, you are a slobber. You're a slobber level one.
You know, no. Not after I got it fixed.
Well, what did you get?
What did you get fixed, dear?
But I guess I got the slobber reflex.
You didn't get no slobber reflex fixed.
Well, at least I got it tried. You didn't.
Well, Bud doesn't have a slobber problem yet. But he's liable to get one if this night continues to go the way it's been going. Listen, Warren.
Listen, Warren, thanks for you being on the show. We can't have no slobber.
No, you're right. I can't have slobber. I can't afford slobber at this rate, at this stage of my career. Thank you very much.
Well, look at you laughing, so you're making fun of the drooler.
Yeah, you're always giving me a problem.
I'm not making fun of the guy. You people are killing me. Warren, thank you, buddy. Warren Benman.
Well, he said it, I was playing in.
He played in the Ohio Rust Oil Drum League. It was a semi-pro hockey league. They had the Bernacki Lancers and the Lancettes, but it was the Lancettes, the women's team.
Yes, that one was apparently feared. A most penalized team in either league, either the men's or the women's. And they were not afraid to use those skates.
Well, that's the part that I read that I could not believe. I mean, that's just... Apparently, this Bernacki Lancettes, not to be confused, by the way, with the secretary of... or the chairman of the Federal Reserve. This is a town in Ohio. But apparently, the Lancettes used those skate blades.
Yeah, they did. They took a man. They'd raise a guy that'd skate right over a guy's face.
Yeah, a couple times skated on a guy's face and stuff.
Well, not a guy. They're playing females. But they did play male teams, and they won. The game that is most legendary, I think, is the Andover game, where they went in and took on the Andover Shellackers and beat them something like 7-1. I don't know anything about hockey. I was just reading up on this.
And this is a man's team.
Yes. And at one point in the game... apparently one of the gals knocked someone to the ice and just started raking her skate over the guy's...
Yeah, right over top of it.
His face?
No, but over the...
Yeah.
So the guy's laying there helpless and she's just running the skate across... Oh, God.
Yeah, pretty bad, man. Pretty bad. Pretty low life, man. They got a lot of low life on that team. And the Bernacki Lancettes, they were all women, but they were low lifes. Low-life, scum of the earth, scum bucket garbage, man. That's all they were.
Well, you're starting to sound very anti-female.
Well, why wouldn't I?
Why wouldn't he is right. I mean, these women are running their skates across a guy's...
Yeah, right over it. They're all skating all over a guy's going, ha, ha, ha. They're all sadistic.
They were women in a man's world. And boy, you guys love to dish it out, but you can't take it. The Bernacki Lancettes are one of the most legendary hockey teams in all of America. And if you don't like it, then lump it.
Big deal. Oh, wow, what a put down.
I don't care.
What are you crying for? Oh, so we've made Margaret cry tonight, so that's the first time this week. Anyway, thank you very much, all of our hockey analysts here this evening, Mr. Holmbeck and, of course, Warren Benman. Now, there are other stories about the Stanley Cup, and it was left in a snowbank, if you can dig this. It was left in a snowbank. And there's another story here of the cup being left or held for ransom. In 1907, it was stolen from a photographer's home where it had been forgotten by the Montreal Wanderers. Apparently, they got so hammered, they left the Stanley Cup in this guy's house, and it was held for ransom. When no one showed interest in its return, the thief left it at the photographer's place. The lady of the house used it as a flower pot until the Wanderers brass remembered it had been where it was, and they went back and got it.
The who?
The Montreal Wanderers. That was the name of the team in 1907. In 1924, the Montreal Canadian players, on their way to a victory party, stashed the trophy in the trunk of their car. Partway to the festivities, the vehicle had a flat tire. The players removed the cup to get at the spare, changed the tire, and drove off, leaving the Stanley Cup perched on a snowbank. Only when it came time to drink champagne from the cup did they realize they didn't have it with them. They drove back to where they'd changed the tire, found the cup sitting there patiently waiting for them, and hastily reclaimed it. Can you imagine the heart attack you're going to have?
Yeah, probably back then he didn't care.
Well, they had to have cared, but maybe not as much, you know.
Yeah, about that, they probably don't let them do that.
Well, they must have someone from the league, don't you think?
I don't know. I don't know how they do it. But obviously, the steps have been taken since then. They don't want to ruin the tradition, which is every team gets to have the cup, and I guess every player does. They don't want to wreck that tradition because it's a grand tradition, and it's what makes hockey, it makes professional hockey in North America completely unique in a lot of ways. It's got this just kind of amateur club feel to it at that particular level. But by the same token, what does happen if that guy, that Ken Holmbrecht guy, couldn't? Are you sure that guy, is that his name?
Yeah, he said his name is.
And he's French Canadian. Anyway, he couldn't tell us really what the cup is worth, what they insure it for, or anything else. Maybe we'll look into that. All right, now.
Yeah, talk about it. There's going to be a press release.
Well, we want to mention that there is going to be a press release. Now, I had, again, another flurry of email exchanges today, and we are nailing down the second, if you will, version or relaunch of our show. But I want all of our radio stations to know the following thing. We are not taking one day off. There will be programming of the Phil Hendry Show one way or another continuing straight on through. So the show won't go dark between our end date at TRN, the 24th, and the beginning of our relaunch, the 25th. So there will be programming throughout. There will not be any period there where we will be off the air. I want all of our affiliates to know that, those that are staying with us, that we will continue on and press on regardless. That's number one. Number two, we, as I mentioned, will be talking, speaking, or addressing in our press release when we're going to begin the first phase of the one-man show, how we want to roll that out. And there's going to be a lot of information there as well concerning affiliates and so on and so forth. I can only encourage you in the most strenuous terms to go to our website, philhendryshow.com. It is there that you will find lists of affiliates. It is there that you'll find all the information you need. And if you can't find the information there, our customer service people kick ass.
Yeah, they're the best.
They do. And what did you say?
Well, he said they're the best, and you go, they do.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Okay, they're...
They do.
They're the best. Never mind. So always email our customer service people and say to them, hey, guess what? My computer exploded. And there's something coming out of my stomach that I think was put there by an alien egg. Can you help me? And we'll get back to you right away with the answer, which is no. But if there's anything having to do with your backstage pass, we're the guys to talk to. Just make sure you hit us up there at Contact Us, our customer service. It's a beautiful thing. All right, we're coming back here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. News about Steven Spielberg. And wait till you check this out. Simi Valley, California, which is... regularly one of the safest and most all-American cities in America. Well, they've got their problems now with teachers, sex, students. Oh, yeah. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
What about it?
You're the guy. You got the Stanley Cup.
The Stanley Cup. And I'm just...
I find that very interesting that Warren Benman fell off. And here's the thing, because I'm married to a man that does have a droplet of dementia.
No, more than a dollop. His whole his mind's coming apart.
No, are you a doctor?
All I'm saying is Gray is Mr. Gray's mind is come unglued.
Are you a doctor? I don't think so.
Well, but I mean, all Bud's saying is that Frank, with that whole gender confusion.
Well, with the whole gender confusion, is he Richard? Richard Kuklugu.
Talk about Richard Kuklinski.
Richard Kuklinski. Is that who you're saying?
Yes.
I know who he is. Yes.
All right. Richard Kuklinski was a hitman for the mafia. I believe he's passed on. He was a notoriously violent man, a notoriously sadistic man. He was interviewed by Parker Dietz, one of the top forensic psychologists and psychiatrists in our country.
See, I hate that.
What?
Every time she gets all high on her horse, she goes, I'm talking about it here.
What did you just say?
Bud, never mind about her manner. Every time you start thinking you're hot crap, you turn into just the clowniest sounding guy I've ever heard in my life.
Bud, we change. You're all like, duh, 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 duh.
Oh, you sound like a real drooler, yeah.
No, no.
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
In any event, Parker Dietz, I believe that's his name, or I don't know, but he's a famous psychiatrist. He interviewed Richard Kuklinski, and he said to him, okay?
Yeah.
One, two, three, and. He said...
Wait, what are you doing?
I'm giving it a dramatic pause. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's fine, but I just found it very weird that you drew attention to it.
No, I did not. I was giving it a... What is wrong with... What are you saying?
You talk about a dramatic pause, and you go, one, two, three.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I'll do it again, and please don't interrupt me. Richard Kuklinski was interviewed by this psychiatrist, Parker Dietz, and the results were fascinating. Two, three.
Why are you counting like that, Margaret?
It's a dramatic pause, Brains. God.
Oh.
God, you call Mr. Henry Brains or anything?
There comes a time, Phil, where I think even you have to be put in your place.
Wait a... all I'm asking you is why were you counting?
I'll say it again.
I understand you were giving it a dramatic pause. Margaret, everything in your life is not a choreographed dance step. Everything in your life... Where are you going?
I'm going to the toilet.
I think she goes in down near the toilet to cry.
Yeah, she sits down near the toilet to cry.
I don't sit down near it.
Take it easy. Anyway, Richard Kuklinski was a notorious hitman and a notoriously sadistic man. Yeah, Margaret's right about all of that. Was interviewed by this psychiatrist, Mr. Park. Oh, you're back?
Yes, I'm not going to have you tell the story. And I was in mid, you know what, so...
What? There's a floater in there?
Maybe. I'll grow up, Phil. Please, if you draw attention to it.
Right.
Richard Kuklinski was interviewed by Parker Dietz, and the conclusion was 2, 3, 4, that he was a part of a very small percentage of human beings. Okay. That are fearless.
Have no fear.
Have no fear. They are biochemically unable to feel fear. Now, what Dr. Dietz told him was that we have this percentage of our population, and not all of them are criminals. In fact, very few of them are criminals. Most of them go into, for instance, test pilot. They go into the police force. They go into the military.
Well, in other words, jobs that would take a little bit of guts.
Yes.
And they don't feel no fear, and they go and do it.
Imagine your whole army had guys like that. Man, you kick ass every day.
Well, either that or you'd get them all killed, because you have to be trained. You can be fearless, but you can still be killed.
What do you mean?
Just because you're fearless, bud, doesn't mean that you're like Superman. You're going to get killed.
Yeah, go walk them right up in front of a gun, man. You think you're all fearless and everything.
Oh.
Oh, my God. What was that?
I'm just saying. I understand. Oh.
Okay, you don't have to drag it out to oh. So what was the upshot of this?
Well, Richard Kuklinski was very thankful for the information.
And then gutted Dr. Dietz like a gutted steer.
Why don't I kick your ass?
Hey! Missed me. Ow!
That didn't miss.
All right. So Kuklinski, huh?
Yep.
Now, I think they made a movie about that cat. I don't know when it's coming out. And very interesting man, father, a husband. His wife was interviewed following his death for this, especially you're talking about, Margaret. And she said that she was afraid of him. It's an interesting story, because there's a part of you that feels you have some connection to this man, because he seemed as if at the end of his life, he seemed like he really wanted to understand himself, and he really wanted to understand why he was the way he was, and he wanted to get to the bottom of it.
Well, yes, there seemed to have been a sort of sincerity on his part. And he, for his part, seemed to really love his family, his wife, his daughters.
But they were afraid of him.
But they were afraid of him, yes.
And some of the stuff. The other thing is his book. Now, he wrote a book, right?
Well, no, he didn't write, but there are a couple of biographies of him.
One of the biographies of him that I read is very, very violent, and some of the violence depicted, or some of the violence described, is almost, you don't, it's tough to believe. It's tough to believe. So I don't know how much of his story he embellished. I don't know how much of it is true. I know he was notorious. I know the FBI knew of him. He's obviously he was a criminal. He got arrested for murder, so he did kill people. And he claims to have been there when Paul Castellano got killed. He claims to have been there when the other guy, Carmine Galanti, got killed. A bunch of stuff. So, you know, maybe we'll find out if and when this movie comes out, or if and when a better biography comes out or something. We're going to be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhenryshow.com. And guess what book is going through the roof in terms of sales? What do you think?
Real Estate or something like that.
No, the 1984.
What?
The 1984 what?
No, the book, 1984.
I don't understand.
You know there was a book called 1984?
Yes.
That's the one.
That's selling.
Okay, we'll be right back.
What are you talking about?
I told you what I was talking about. The world famous Phil Henry Show, where truth is our bitch, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And we're very happy to be with you. And over the last couple of weeks, we have had a mobile site in a beta test program. We've had our Backstage Pass members testing our mobile site, looking at the mobile site, giving us ideas and suggestions as to how we can make it better. And been very happy to do that. As a result, we're going to have a mobile site up and running very, very soon that is one that we feel will reflect the needs of our subscribers. And it's going to make logging in a lot easier for people who are subscribers. It's going to make navigating the site, even for people who are non-subscribers, it'll at least give you a working knowledge of the mobile site and where things are. I looked at it myself, and I was just blown away. I love how you can access the archives as quickly as possible. You can access the daily podcast, the classic podcast. The news feed is right there for you. And if there's anywhere else you have to navigate on the site, it's all very, very clearly delineated there. The menu bar, easy to use. And the login is very, very easy. It's the first thing you encounter. Some people are saying, well, how about an app where you log in automatically? You know, this is, and we are going to have an app, but we, as I mentioned to you, it's better to have your site the way you want it, or at least as close to the way you want it as possible, before you get apps, before you're spending money on apps and you're sending people to websites that maybe are not all that. With this mobile site, we'll have finished something that, you know, I've been wanting for years, and that is a good, easy-to-navigate mobile site, and one that you can log into easy as a subscriber. So it's time to get a Backstage Pass. Never been a better time. It's only $9.99 a month. We've had one price increase since 1999. That's 13 and a half years.
No, that's 14.
No, it isn't. It's 13.
It's, well, let's see, 99.
Hold on. 99, 2000, 2001, 2000.
Wait a minute. You don't have to do that.
You sure it's?
I'm sure. 13 and a half years. We've had one price increase in 13 and a half years, and that took place in 2010, 2011, I forget. Anyway, Backstage Pass time now at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Make sure you get that and be ready for our mobile site when we launch. Now, I'm just here for the purposes of our friends on Phil TV in HD. I've logged in. And what I'm eventually going to do is go over to the videocast, which is what we are every night broadcasting or webcasting. We have not only our radio show, but we have a videocast of our show, which includes a pre-show. So you're able to watch during the pre-show all of the behind the scenes, and some of it highly personal, very inflammatory, fist fights break out. I'm kidding, but you know.
Just about, though.
Well, not just about, but there's some pretty crazy behavior. Anyway, That is accessible on your mobile unit as well. So our video cast is available on all devices, whether it is an iPhone, whether it is any kind of a smartphone, your iPad, your tablet, you can pick it up there. So it's, as I say, a great time to get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. I don't even know if I entered in the... Oh, I did. I entered in my my username and my password correctly. And if you're watching on Phil TV in HD, you will see there's my kisser right there on the mobile device.
You always say your kisser. That is such an outdated word.
Yeah, but said, Bob, say your face.
I think face.
All right. Well, I like kisser. All right, so Steven Spielberg, of all the people to sound the alarm on the decline and fall of the film industry, Steven Spielberg might seem like an improbable choice, but the director speaking with George Lucas at a ceremony celebrating the opening of a new building at the University of Southern California's film school said an implosion of his industry is inevitable. Case in point for him, Lincoln, which was a commercial and critical success, was apparently almost an HBO exclusive. He said, we were this close, ask HBO, this close, he said, in a response to Lucas's comment that eventually the Lincolns will go away, they're going to be on television. He only got the film into theaters in the first place because he basically owns his own infrastructure. So meaning Steven Spielberg has the ability to distribute, Steven Spielberg has the ability to get it into theaters, he may own some of the theaters. Steven Spielberg has great clout at the studios. I don't know how, maybe even has a piece of the action there. As documented by The Hollywood Reporter, George Lucas...
Wait. Why is George Lucas weighing in on Lincoln? That is Steven Spielberg's domain.
Yeah, that's Steven Spielberg movie. So, he can have an opinion about it.
Why can't he have an opinion?
Well, he can have an opinion, but it all seems very unseemly to me. I think if Steven Spielberg is holding forth about one of his own movies... And you're George Lucas, and you're, and another thing. And I'm Steven Spielberg. I would wheel about, okay? I would wheel.
What's wheel mean?
To wheel is to turn on your heel. So you raise your foot up so that you're on the heel of one foot. You lift up the other foot so you're literally balancing on that heel and then spin about and fix the individual with a glare. As if to say, what do you think, in all of your stupidity, what do you think this has gained you, other than maybe another 30 seconds of life? What?
Hold on, because you're going off.
I'm going off what?
Sure, tell me about how you wheel.
Yeah, what is that about? Are you talking about, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about George Lucas having the temerity. Okay, there's a very good word there, Phil, and for those of you listening at home, the temerity to engage Steven Spielberg, and say to him, oh, well, look, and another thing, let me tell you all about Steven's movie. George, a word to the wise, and you and I have spoken before, George, you know that I never, ever pull punches. You know that I'm honest. I may be the only member of the media that's been to your home, eaten your cooking, slept in your beds... And that doesn't mean I've slept with George Lucas.
No, I understand.
But I have slept in a variety of his guest rooms. And I've been in your refrigerator at 2 a.m. and you've come down and we've talked. And you know what I've said to you, George. I've said, would you stop? Give it up with all of the spooks and goblins and the fun things you do and make a real movie the way Steven Spielberg has. Make one with grit and with gristle and with muscle. And quit making all the goblin, woo, the fairy star. I get so sick of it.
What do you mean?
I'm sick of George Lucas.
All right, Margaret, you have a way of telling a story.
Yes.
That is long and involved, and then we don't get any information.
You think I'm going to give you the information? It'll be in my column tomorrow morning. A little bird told me, Dicklin Syndicate.
Well, can you give us an idea what you're going to be writing?
I'm basically going to say that the time has come for George Lucas to either put up or shut it. And I mean close it, and then put tape across it, and yes, leave it laying in a park.
Oh my God, that's like that little Casey Anthony girl.
Not Casey, Kaylee.
Oh, well, Margaret.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm getting...
If George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are friends, if he wants to make a statement about George Lucas's films, I think he can. I didn't see anything in the story where Steven Spielberg was objecting. And the point that they're trying to make that we're missing here, because you're telling me all about George Lucas and how you slept in his beds and how you ate in his refrigerator.
I did, and we're not talking about sex. So you can get that look off your face, Robert, and you can wipe that spittle from your mouth, bud. No, not hoo-hoo. I mean it.
All right, look. As documented by the Hollywood Reporter, Lucas added, you're talking about Steven Spielberg and George Lucas can get their movie into a, theater. Oh, okay. Spielberg's advice for the aspiring USC filmmakers was, well, straight out of a disaster film script, every man for himself. He said, eventually there's going to be an implosion. There's going to be an implosion where three or four or maybe even a half a dozen mega budget movies are going to be go crashing into the ground, and that's going to change the paradigm, as if it hasn't already, you know.
Well, the John Carter was an absolute, whoever greenlit that, and we do know who greenlit it, I forget his name, he's out of a job, and as well he should be, and I love him, I forget his name, and I know it sounds ridiculous to say I love him, but I forget his name.
It does.
I'm sorry, I do, I love, I don't know who he is, but he lost his job as well he should have. He should have been escorted to the edge of the lot, to wherever the legal boundary is of that lot, that movie lot, escorted and then a boot put into the small of his back and kicked into the street as a bus goes by.
Yay.
Thank you.
But you love him.
Yes, I love him, but this is a hardball world, Phil.
All right, well, Mr. Spielberg goes on to say, that scenario presumably leaves established directors like Lucas and Spielberg to fight for their creative lives in a new and unforgiving world. But there's the thing. That here's the thing. Even as Lucas and Spielberg lamented the fall of their industry, they made a good case for more or less ignoring the demarcations between traditionally different forms of digital media, television, the internet, which would be Netflix, which Spielberg specifically praised, and even video games, which both Lucas and Spielberg dabbled in. An example, while lamenting that his industry doesn't take too kindly to risk your work these days, Lucas called cable television audiences much more adventurous. So while the big coming implosion will be a big deal to the industry itself, it's less clear what the two famous filmmakers think it means for people who just want to watch their work. So in other words, the same thing's happening in movies that happened in radio. There's all kinds of places for audio entertainment, and there's all kinds of places for audio entertainers to ply their trade, if you will. I make, from our digital platform right now, I'm making, at the very pinnacle of our radio career, and the Phil Henry terrestrial-only platform, we're making pretty damn close to that.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. But it's a business now, and I have an overhead, and I have a lot of employees, and I have, you know, so it's slightly different. But the fact remains that the digital world provides an income for this radio show, provides capital monies for this radio show, every bit as real and, if you will, juicy as the terrestrial world. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with more. Margaret Gray is with us. We've got some more entertainment news. I know, Margaret, that you want to get into. And this has to do with who?
Well, this has to do with someone. Well, it's George. I'm going to hand this off to Bobby Dooley because I'm just going to lose my temper.
George Takei. We'll be right back, Phil Henry Show.
Truth yes, George is Takei. Our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We've got Bobby Dooley in here, and she's going to be joining us for a brief report here, I believe, on George Takei, if I'm not mistaken.
I for Earth, H
is this
for
her
power.
Music?
Yeah, this is Bobby Dooley music.
Good in either corner, flower.
This is the stupidest, most ass music.
I think this is good for
a
her.
Is for knick-knack, L is for
Bobby Dooley, is this, who is this, Bare Naked
so
Ladies?
Yeah, Bare Nude Ladies.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Well, I know.
Margaret, Bare Naked Ladies. Bobby Dooley joining us here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show from Western States Homeowners Association. Bobby, how are you?
Well, I was all right, Phil, until I heard that. I don't think that that's fair. And, Stephen?
No, get the other one.
if you have the other song that's available, which is the Bananas.
Doug, you want it? They're the Bananas.
Who are the Bananas?
He has the song, Phil, which is far more appropriate.
Excuse me. Bobby, this is Margaret.
Yes.
Well, I know you're all bored with me, but what do you mean the Bananas?
There's a song that Steve and I approved that I gave the thumbs up on, and Steve dropped the high sign today.
Yeah, I went ahead and gave the high sign on it.
And it's the Banana.
I don't know of any song, but...
Is it Bananarama?
That's it, Bananarama.
Oh, well then, speak English, please.
Margaret, would you just back off? This is Bobby's moment, okay?
Yeah, it's my moment. My moment.
You're such a child.
My moment, not yours.
You're a child.
My moment.
Okay, fine. Your moment. Margaret, go and...
Yeah, let's go squeeze one off. Your eye's squeezing them off. Yeah!
Talk to me like that.
Just leave the studio.
And the way she beats up on the drooler, I am... Phil.
Okay, can we not call Bud the drooler?
Well, she does beat up on me.
She does. She beats the slobberer, and I think it's wrong, and I will tell you this now, Phil, with or without your approval, I'm going to go to the California Board of the Mentally, whichever one handles that, I don't know which one it is, but I do know that there is a group of individuals at the state of California that are in charge of making people that are, I don't know what you call it, if it's...
Talk about people that protect like mentally retarded?
It's the California Board of Protecting...
Slobberers.
Do you mind, Margaret?
No, not slobberers.
You're going to go to the California Board and report what? That Margaret's been slapping around Bud?
Yes. Okay.
I got a business to run. I got to kick some asses occasionally. The players couldn't get a drink at the table.
Well,
What is that, the Godfather?
Yeah, all I'm going to say is, you can't slap me no more.
That's right, Bud. That's exactly right. But before we get into any of that, and before we even begin talking about any of that garbage, do you mind terribly if we get the banana?
All right, can we get the banana or whatever the hell this is so we can... Okay. Go ahead. Cue Russ Mitchell, please.
And now, the Phil Hendry Show presents Bobby Dooley from the Western Estates Homeowners Association.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bobby Dooley, and this is the Western Estates Homeowners Association. This is where I give you fashion tips. I talk to you about things that are happening at the Western Estates Homeowners Association. And I also talk about some of our favorite celebrities at the Western Estates Homeowners Association. And as you know, an individual that we really feel we discovered, Steve, you know.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we discovered this guy probably more than anybody would have had it discovered him.
Yeah, is George Takei. In the news, George Takei, his Facebook page, consistently virally popular, and when they say virally popular, they mean that it's going everywhere. Everyone loves it as much as if you had a virus. You know?
Right.
So...
It's not exactly the best comparison, but when they say viral, it catches.
It infects everyone.
Yeah, it infects you.
Okay, Bud, I'm not talking to you.
Well, that's right. It infects you. But George Takei's Facebook mea culpa, when it was found out, it's been written with content by a ghostwriter. Everybody across social media felt betrayed, terribly, terribly betrayed, and felt terribly, terribly violated in a great many ways, Mr. Hendry. George Takei's Facebook mea culpa is much in line with the character we've all grown to love on Facebook, and it seems that the brewing scandal will not hurt the Star Trek and social media star so much, simply in part because the voice in which he answers the questions is the same we've gotten used to on his page. In essence, the ghostwriter seems to capture Takei to a pretty decent T. And following on that...
Oh, would you get to the point, please?
Margaret.
Excuse me?
Well, you're doing all this build-up. What did he say?
I'm getting to it. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go.
No, not there you go. She hangs up when you butt in. You knew that that was going to happen.
Yeah, you did it on purpose.
I'm testing to see what kind of fortitude she has. She's gutless. And I told you this at the beginning.
Why do you butt in when you know it's going to just upset her?
She's got to move this along, Phil. It's taking too long.
No matter your persona, we all cobble together bits of information. I don't know. Takai just basically said he doesn't give a big sweet damn, okay? He doesn't care. If you don't like it, take it and pound it. That's what he said. And I don't follow George Takai on Facebook. I think a lot of his popularity, it was born of the character he played on Star Trek. Now, I'm also saying that the man obviously has a great way with social media.
Yeah, you don't have the same kind of way with it.
What are you talking about, bud?
Well, you've only got about 13,000 followers, something like that.
Right, because I'm on overnight radio. That's about as anonymous as you can get, man. I mean, I'm on an overnight radio show, and I'll hold my opinion at that.
You're going to say something bad.
I am holding my opinion. Let's just say that, you know.
How many Twitter followers do you have?
We got about 12,000 Twitter followers. So, you know, it's not nothing to sneeze at, but by the same token, it ain't all that great because there's cats on the radio, but they're all doing morning drive.
Yeah, Opie and Anthony got 100,000.
Okay.
What does Bubba the Sponge have?
Bubba the Sponge. Bubba the Love Sponge?
Yes.
Bubba's probably got about 100,000, but both of those guys do morning drive radio shows. They are in primetime radio, okay? And they've been doing morning drive for a long time, so we're a late night show, man. And we're on at a time when there are fewer sets in use. Oh, yeah, and on top of everything else, our show sucks a lot of times. I'm kidding. All right, we'll be right back.
Well, you said it.
Well, no, I didn't say it. I'm kidding. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Now, what's the banana?
Phil Hendry. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
And it is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back. And philhenryshow.com. And we're on Twitter, twitter.com/realphilhenry. Margaret, you're there?
Yes, it's twitter.com/MargaretGray.
Bobby Dooley is.
Yeah, Bobby Dooley is.
Fine.
Well, all right, it's twitter.com/BobbyDooley, BobbyDooley. Bud Dickman, the Bud Dickman, THE. Bud, BudDickman. Robert, you're not there, huh?
No, man, I don't do no Twitter.
Okay, Robert's not on Twitter, so check it out if you'd like to. We're also at Facebook, facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, PHANS. A former elementary school teacher in Southern California has been charged with having sex with a boy under the age of 14. Wow.
Woo!
Man.
You talk about hard up.
Well, I mean, I almost get to the point sometimes where if I hear about a teacher having sex with a guy, a young man who's 17 or 16, I guess I don't know. It's bad. It's against the law, yes. But you don't look at them the same way that you may. They are breaking the law. They should go to jail.
Well, wait a minute. What are you saying?
I'm saying what every other man is saying, which is, it's a very tough thing to categorize this, in my mind, as a twisted. And I admit I have to learn. This is my own educational shortfall. That when you hear of a adult teacher having sex with molesting an underage boy, it's difficult for me to imagine that in the same ways I think of a man sexually abusing a young girl. But I admit that that's my own hang-up, man. I'm not saying they got it wrong. You know, I don't have the ego that says, well, since my experience is such and such, then I admit I got something to learn here, you know. Because if it happened to me, you know, and it affected my life negatively, and I would not want to be saying that to somebody or trying to get somebody to understand that and having them looking at me and saying, well, come on, kid, you must have really enjoyed it. You know, you don't look at it. If there are people suffering, there's people suffering. But I mean, this is going beyond the pale. This is a under the age of 14. Her name is Malia Brooks. She was suspended several months ago by the Simi Valley Unified School District. Simi Valley is a town here to the north west of Los Angeles. It is toward the Conejo Valley, which is an area of Southern California that sort of gets it's you're getting closer to the Central Coast. You're getting up toward Ventura and further up Santa Barbara. Simi Valley is a place where there are a lot of police officers that live there. There are a lot of firefighters that live there. It's been described as the cop land of L.A. It is regularly ranked as one of the safest cities in America. And so, you know, it's got a reputation to live up to. And this ain't obviously all that good for its rep. This teacher, 32 years of age, she surrendered to police on Tuesday, according to Channel 5 KTLA television in Los Angeles. She was being held in lieu of $2 million bail. Man. Simi Valley Police Detective Casey Nicholson said Brooks was teaching sixth grade at the Garden Grove Elementary School when the investigation began in February. She was suspended and then she later resigned. Brooks faces a total of five charges, lewd acts with a child under 14. Investigators say they believe there was only one victim. The school and district administration have fully cooperated with the police. Brooks is a mother of two. She's divorced. In October 2011, a local newspaper, the Ventura County Star, featured her as a cook du jour. What the hell does that mean?
Well, she must have been some sort of a...
She cooks du jour.
You don't cook du jour.
Did I like a gravy?
No, it's not gravy. Cook du jour. She was probably some really great cook. All right, so Ventura County Star, way to do it. Channel 5 does the legwork on finding out. I'm kidding. I shouldn't even say that. That's the cheap shot.
They don't know. Channel 5, what do you mean they did the legwork? All they had to do was read a police blotter.
A police blotter?
I said police blotter.
What?
I'm trying, excuse me, but my bridge work. A police, hold on. Yeah.
Margaret, what are you doing?
Hold on. I've got a loose bridge. Gear. Bud, get that ball peen hammer.
Wait a second. What are you doing?
I'm trying to get my teeth fixed.
Here you go, Ms. Gray.
All right. Okay. All Channel 5 had to do was look at a police blotter.
Yeah, it's not a bad bridge there.
I didn't know you have upper bridge. So we're going to have a problem now with your teeth?
No, you won't have a problem with you. I'm not a problem with you.
Yeah, Ms. Gray, you should probably be off mic while you're fixing your teeth.
What do you think about me, Bill?
Don't tell him to stick it up as you know what. What?
I'm going to say you, but I'm going to fix it.
You got your teeth are rattling around in your head. I can't understand what you're saying.
Nobody can understand it. You better get off mic.
Come on, Mr. Hall. Don't you believe it?
Oh, you kidding me? You going to bring Hall into this? I can tell that you're having a hard time keeping your teeth in your mouth.
My people in my mouth. Probably the ball.
All right, Mr. Hall? Yeah, Mr. Hall? Ms. Gray won't get off the air and everything, and we told her to, and she said she... Okay, David.
Yeah, David.
Yeah, what's up?
Margaret lost the epoxy.
What's going on? Well, all right, I mean, I can understand her.
I can't understand her.
Well, then why don't you listen a little harder? You know that tonight is our six-month anniversary, me and Daphne... And
I don't care about you and Daphne. I can't understand what she's saying.
Thank you very much, Margaret.
I'll talk to you guys later.
What are you doing, running the show now? I can't understand anything you're saying.
Yeah, he said to listen harder.
Listen harder. Man. What? Don't say harder in a dirty way. I didn't say it in a dirty way. You're the one that said, listen harder. What? You know what?
I can understand it. What, Margaret? Do the show and shut up.
Don't you tell... Who's saying that?
Mm-hmm. She is.
I didn't know that you had upper bridge work problems, and I certainly didn't know that if they came unglued, like, as Bud was saying, a man's mind coming apart, that you would sound like that. But you sound... You and your husband, Frank, are... No one can comprehend anything you guys say.
How dare you? Where do you think they're able to hang?
I don't know what you're saying.
How dare you?
He's saying, how dare you? Frank's just as understandable as the drooler, meaning me.
So, in other words, you're insulting him as a drooler, and you sound like you're missing your entire tongue. Say that again.
You want to do the show without her?
Yeah, tonight I'd rather I do the show without you.
But you're not gonna, because she's got a contract.
All right, so there is the story there on the Simi Valley teacher, and I don't know when this stuff is going to end. It's just disgusting. Oh, my God. I didn't understand what you're saying.
Dad, why don't you get past that story, because it's not very uplifting, and nobody want to hear about a perv.
Yes, thank you. Well, I didn't want to read it anyway, but... I didn't say she was a piece of ass. No, I did not.
Well, you've been horrible. You feel irate that it's possible to be about being them.
Okay, that's great, and I think that you're probably right, but in this case, I think it's very, very important. All right, we're done with it. Now, here's a story. What would you do to a husband who took your $23,000 ring that he gave you, an engagement ring worth $23,000, and the dumbass sold it at a garage sale by mistake? Margaret?
If Frank did that, then I'd have him running at the Arlington Million as a gelding. Well, finally, you're lightening up.
Yeah, that was funny. Well, he thought the box was empty, but a California husband accidentally sold his wife's $23,000... Yeah? I don't know what town it's in. What difference does it make? White trash?
Yep.
I don't know. It's Laguna Niguel. Does that sound like white trash to you? Doesn't sound like it to me. It sounds like some rich people. At least they're comfortable.
Comfort is relative.
In any event, he thought the box was empty, but a California husband accidentally sold his wife's $23,000. Would you get your teeth glued in so I don't have to keep listening to this?
There, are you happy?
Yes, I'm happy. Why didn't you do that sooner?
Because I was waiting for the epoxy to dry, you...
Goober.
Goober, thank you, bud.
Yeah. He thought the box was empty, but a California husband accidentally sold his wife's $23,000 diamond ring for $10 at a garage sale on June 1st. Each year, our community holds a garage sale. I was in the hospital. I just had a baby, so my moron husband thought... No, she didn't say that. So my husband thought it would be fun for my other kids if they could sell some things at a garage sale, said Raquel Clotier of Laguna Niguel, California, who owns the ring. Owns? I don't think so. I think she owned.
Wait a minute, Phil. That ring was sold by mistake.
Well, the ring, let's be clear, the ring wasn't sold. It was the box that the ring was in. That was sold. The ring was in the box. The husband sold the ring box is what he sold.
But the clod sold the ring.
He sold the box for $10. There was a ring in it, yes. So she thinks she still owns it. In fact, the Good Morning America Yahoo News thinks she still owns it. In fact, probably everybody thinks she still owns it except me.
That's only because you lost a ring on a golf course, and you're all pissed off because the old bag that took it home has still not returned it to you. Isn't that right?
Pretty much, yes. He didn't know that before I went to the hospital, I put my ring in that box. I wanted the ring to be in a safe place and out of the reach of my 2-year-old twin, said Ms. Cloutier. Well, guess what? You put it in an unsafe place. You put it in a place where your clawed husband, drooling all the way, took it, sold it, $10, 23 G's, goodbye, mwah, hasta luego, baby. Cloutier realized her ring and the box it was in, if you'll pardon the expression, was missing a day after she returned from the hospital June 5th, one day before the anniversary of D-Day. Now do you see the connection? Neither do I.
What are you talking about?
Nothing. I go into my husband's closet, can't find the box. He can't either. Pardon the expression. Then he tells me he sold it, and I say, you sold my box? He said, well, the ring that was in it. And the whole thing just devolved into a screaming and crying match, but then we shook hands because it was a big misunderstanding.
Wait a minute. Let me see.
Don't pull that out of my hand. I'm kidding around. Well, we'll be back to give you the upshot on that stupid story and more here on this Wednesday night Phil Hendry Show, 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Don't forget to watch our website after the show. Check out our show log. And tomorrow morning, of course, we'll have a podcast of the show available to all of our BSPs.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I will leave only for a couple of moments.
Put the glue on, will you?
I will.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What are you showing, bud, on Phil TV?
That's the Ferrari, or the Ferrari Grand Prix.
What do you mean, the Ferrari Grand Prix?
It's one of the races from Europe.
Yeah, no, I understand that it looks to me like it's a motor race. It's a Grand Prix race. But why are you doing that?
Because it's bitching. It's more bitching than anything you could imagine. And see right there? Look, see how the cars go fast and everything?
Yeah, he sees it, man, but he's just trying to say, what's the name of it?
Well, it's a Grand Prix race.
Yeah, it's the Ferraris right there.
That's the name of a car. What's the name of the race?
It's the Canadian Grand Prix.
The Canadian Grand Prix. Okay. Why? And so you're showing some of that on during the break. Bud was rolling all kinds of weird. Well, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and then yesterday we had a Hitler movie, and then another time we had that guy, dancing like he's got something wedged.
A guy dancing like he has something wedged.
Yeah, it was like that nudie cootie.
Oh, it was part of the nudie cootie movie. They were dancing.
Oh, that black and white?
Yes. Don't say black and white like you're all racist.
What?
Well, you did kind of say it dismissively.
I didn't say dis... What did you... All right.
Oh, Phil, you so black and white. You're saying it very dismissively, as if you're saying, you know, please, someone, get the Lysol.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Not yeah. You guys are idiots, okay?
I'm an idiot, am I?
Yes, in that instance, yes. Okay. Now, I wanted to get back to something here.
I'm an idiot.
I apologize, Margaret, but you were not being very smart. I wanted to get back to something here. Now, this guy that sold his wife's ring for... He didn't sell the ring. He sold the box and didn't know the ring was in it. Now, during the break, we were going to, you know, move on to another story, but then Dan Northcraft, our close personal friend and engineer, said the following thing. He said, oh, you've heard of people get angry at their spouse... And they sell something of value for hardly any money. I said, no, I haven't heard of that. He says, oh, yeah. They get really pissed off at their spouse for whatever reason, and they take something of great value, and they sell it. And Dan was speculating that maybe that was the situation here. She says her husband feels, quote, really terrible, but you'll notice nobody interviewed the husband. Maybe they should have. Maybe he would have had a very believable story. Oh, you know, I can't believe it. But if you're having a garage sale and...
Well, now, Dan thought of this, not you, Phil.
I know Dan thought of it, but he thought of it after I made the following point, if I may. If you're having a garage sale and you're selling things, okay, since when are you, like, reaching up and feeling around on a shelf?
Well, you don't know that he was feeling around.
Didn't she say she put it someplace where it would be safe? Now, to me, that sounds like a place that is going to be out of the view of people. It sounds like a place that you can't just reach and grow. Oh, look at that. I'll take this and sell it at the yard sale. So it's like it's a place. He's got to find it. And he finds this box. And the first thing that comes into his mind, or maybe the second or third, but at some point after finding the box, says, hey, this would be a really good thing to sell at our garage sale, takes it down there, and sells it for $10. And don't you open a box. If you see a ring box, what's the first thing you do?
Ask how much?
No, man. If you see, if it's in your house.
Wonder how it got there.
Margaret, what do you do?
I open it up to see what's inside.
Exactly. Ask how it got there.
That's what I'd say. What's a ring box do in my house? I'm not wearing no ring.
You're not wearing a ring. You're not wearing a lady ring.
Yeah, I'm not wearing a lady ring.
Okay, fine. You're not wearing a lady ring, but you got a ring box. Aren't you going to open up, man, and see what's inside? How did it get here? This clown didn't do either thing. He took the box and said, let's sell it. It's our yard sale. So he goes out, puts it down, sells it for $10. What's to stop anybody from considering? Why shouldn't we consider that in the same light, if you will, as some of these other events? Now, I actually went and did some research because Dan had given me some direction on this. There's the story of a disc jockey's angry wife selling his sports car worth $45,000 for less than a buck.
What?
Exactly.
Man, I'm about to slap a woman.
You should never slap a woman.
Right there, sell a sports car?
No, you should never slap a woman, okay?
What if she slapped you?
You should never slap a woman.
What, she kick you in the ball?
Kick me in the ball?
The uniball.
What about the uniball?
That's what's going... Where have you been, Phil? Lance Armstrong? It's something to consider.
If she kicked me in the ball... No, it's nothing to consider with me because I've got two healthy ones, okay?
All right, Phil. Hey, way to do it. Phil Henry has two testicles.
Oh, I don't know what point you're trying to make.
The point is, what if she kicked you in the ball? Would you then slap her?
No, I would not. I'd go get some ice.
Yee-ow!
Don't you laugh at me.
Take it easy. $45,000 car... And this woman sells it for less. A controversial radio DJ's wife sold his $45,000 sports car on eBay for less than a dollar after he flirted with model Jody Marsh on air. Now, this was in Great Britain. Kerrang 105.2's Tim Shaw told the sexy babe that he was prepared to leave his wife and their two children for her. Man. His wife was listening and immediately started an auction on eBay to sell his Lotus Esprit Turbo with a buy it now option of $1. The item description: I need to get rid of this car in the next 2 to 3 hours before my husband gets home to find it gone and all his belongings in the street. This car was sold for under 5 minutes.
This is bullcrap.
No, it's true, man. It was sold under 5 minutes. It wasn't the first time this DJ upset his 27-year-old wife. When she was pregnant, he rang up her sister live on air and said he thought about her while having sex with his wife. Mrs. Shaw said, when he said he would leave me and the kids for Jody Marsh, that was it for me. I'm sick of him disrespecting this family for the sake of his act. The car is his pride and joy, but the idiot put my name on the logbook, so I just sold it. I guess that's the British term for...
I think it's like the pink slip.
Okay. I didn't care about the money. I just wanted to get him back. Lotus, similar to the one sold for less than... Oh, they show a picture of it. She added, there is no hope for a reconciliation. A Kerrang 105.2 spokesperson said the DJ was absolutely gutted. Gutted like a fish? What's the matter?
Well, that's a very sad story.
Oh, get out of here. The guy, frankly, you know what? When you do that, when you live your life on the air like that, people are ready to cut your you-know-what. It's happened to me. It happens to everybody. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry Auto Racing.
All right, and it is the Phil Henry Show here every night to every night till 1 o'clock at the West Coast, 4 a.m. in Tampa. That's right, WWBA 820 a.m. We're on the air in Tampa. We're on the air in a lot of places, but we are at present and for the foreseeable future, to use the French pronunciation as Margaret does.
Phil, don't mock the way I speak. I do this for a reason. To educate and to culture. C-U-L-T-U-R-E. What does that spell, bud?
Culture.
No, you're wrong.
He's right.
No, he's wrong. It spells culture. Culture. Bud, try it.
Culture.
Oh, what a... Boy, I'll tell you, you know, now I know why God invented lockjaw for you.
Well, that's a terrible thing to say. I can't even pronounce what you're saying.
You can't pronounce with the kid what I'm saying?
I can't pronounce what you want this kid to say. Culture. 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 Anyway, we're on the air in Tampa at, and I just want to say that. We're on the air in Tampa, WWBA, 820 AM. There. I said it, and I'm happy that I said it. Thank you. And we will continue to post these notices as we see fit. Thank you so very deeply. Is that Lauren Green from Fox News?
No, that's Harris Faulkner.
Oh, boy, is she gorgeous.
You got that right.
She is a beautiful woman at Harris Faulkner. A beautiful woman. All right, welcome back to the Phil Henry Show here. 877-876-PHIL, online at philhenryshow.com. And Twitter and Facebook and all that there, man. What's going on, man? Did this game play tonight? No. We told you that the Blackhawks beat the Bruins. The world's oldest person has died. Now, this was a story that we had featured earlier in the month, I think, or it might have been last month, that the world's oldest person existed in Japan. Well, just as soon as we give you the news, now the world's oldest person has died. Japan's Jiromon Kimura, who had been recognized by the Guinness World Book as the world's oldest living person and the oldest man ever. Does that mean that there was a woman that was older?
That's the oldest man that ever was.
Okay. Does that mean there was an older woman?
What does that mean?
What it means is if they're specifying that it was the oldest man ever, then there must have been a woman who was older.
Why do you think that?
Never mind, bud.
Bud, are you always this dumb, or is it just the hour?
I don't know.
All right. Kimura of Kyotango, Japan... was born...
Let me see that. Kimura Kyotango, Japan.
Give me that back, grabbing that from me.
Here, I'll do it. Kimango.
Give me that.
No. Kumo.
If anybody grabs this news copy from me one more time, they're going to get this right fist right down their throat, okay?
Bud, sounds like something you'd enjoy.
No, you would. You like to have the beer.
Watch it.
Kimura of Kyotango, Japan, was born April the 19th in 1897. Officials in Kyotango said he died in a local hospital where he'd been undergoing treatment for pneumonia. According to Guinness, Kimura was the first man in history to have lived to 116 years of age. Well, how do they know that?
Well, they don't, Phil, but according to recorded records.
The oldest man in history... I thought those people in Georgia lived a long time. Not Georgia the state, but Georgia the country.
I'm not familiar.
Apparently there was a story that was very oft repeated and circulated for a while, and it might have been horse dung, and if it was, boy, oh boy, there was a yogurt company, or maybe it wasn't a yogurt company.
Oh, yeah, the yogurt company said that people lived to be like 130 or something. No, they didn't, man. They didn't say 130, but they said really old.
Yeah, in the country of Georgia... the people were said to live a long time because they ate this yogurt, okay?
Well, what kind of yogurt?
It was made there in Georgia. It's a yogurt that is made from the cows and the milk products, the dairy products, from that region of the world. And the inference was that if you eat a lot of yogurt, and I think it was being used by one of the yogurt companies.
Well, which one, Phil? I've got to know.
I don't know. Dannon, one of them.
Well,
you don't know which yogurt company is. What difference does it make?
Because it's something I think I'd like to try.
Oh, are you telling me that you believe this horse dung? I mean, it's who knows if it's true?
Well, Phil, we can't afford...
What is it with you? You all afraid? What, are you afraid of dying?
Yes, I am.
Wait a minute. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm fine. It's just... I'm feeling my mortality.
Margaret, take it easy, will you?
Phil, you know that I'm 2 years away from being 60. You just turned 60. What was it like?
Take it easy, Miss Gray. You want me to go get you a bubble up?
I don't want a bubble up, thank you.
Not a bubble up. You mean a 7-Up?
Whatever.
Yeah, I turned 60. What about it?
Well, you realize that it's a devastating age. People are going to think things. People are going to act a certain way. You've had it tough up to this point, Phil. It's going to be near impossible for you to get work after this.
Well, you know what? I don't give a damn. How about that? I just don't. I'm going to go on and do as best as I can... and I'm going to have fun, and whatever.
And you don't mind it if people call you old man and all of that?
People are going to do what they're going to do. People are going to do what they're going to do, you know? That is the mark of a small mind, a very itsy-bitsy mind, to call you old man or old woman.
How small?
Oh, about that. What do you mean, how small? I'm talking about it's the work of a person that doesn't have a very broad view of life, and that's their cheap shot. Anybody that takes cheap shots, anybody that says that kind of stuff, they have one thing in mind. A, they want to hurt you, and those things do hurt, but they also are betraying a decided inability to really, you know, show insight. If all they can say about you is you're old, they have no real insight into who you are. They have no real insight into not only what's good about you, but what's bad about you. So they just go for the cheap insult, and it also shows that they're angry. And when people are angry, it generally means they themselves are hurt by something that you did.
Hey, all right, Mr. Henry.
Thank you.
Well, I don't get it.
Take it easy, will you? You got a husband. You're worried about you. You got a husband that doesn't know whether it's a he or a she or an it.
Let's get off of Frank and let's get back on me, and don't you take that the wrong way, bud.
Well, you're basically opening the door.
No, I wasn't.
Well, take it easy. What?
No, never mind.
You know, I hate it when you interrupt the show with this stuff and oh, never mind.
I said never mind. Let it drop.
God.
Yes, ma'am. Anyway, the world's oldest person, 116 years of age. It was held by another Japanese, 115-year-old Misao Okawa of Osaka. It was held by Misao Okawa of Wakawa.
It was held by Misao Okawa.
Let me do it. It was held...
Yeah, I'll do it. It was held by the Okawa adult...
Give me that. Don't take that from my hands. It was held by Misao Okawa. Wow, wow.
Are you guys all mentally ill? It was held by Misao Okawa of Osaka.
Well, how are you able to do that?
Mr. Henry's an announcer. He knows how.
Right. Some of you guys forget, you know, that who the professional is here. You know, you've been talking on microphones for so long. People have been telling you, oh, Margaret, you know, let me get your opinion. And all you guys are amateurs, man. I'm the pro, huh? Huh?
Yes, sir, Mr. Henry.
Yes, all right.
I'm the pro. You guys are all along for the ride. I'm the professional. I know how to say this stuff good. 115-year-old Misao Okawa Baobaba.
Yeah.
Misao Okawa of Osaka. Okawa was born March 5th, 1898. And, man, that was way back when, man. They had covered wagons and guys spitting into spittoons and stuff.
In Japan?
Well, anyway, she was the world's oldest living woman. All right, now I'm really confused. If the oldest living person... The oldest living person is... Oh, I see. The oldest living person is now 115-year-old Misao Okawa. She was born, and she's also the world's oldest living woman. Mr. Kimura was an exceptional person, said Craig Glenday, editor-in-chief of Guinness World Records and Old Guys in Japan. I'm kidding. Craig Glenday of Guinness World Records, as the only man to have ever lived for 116 years and the oldest man whose age has been fully authenticated, he has a truly special place in world history. Kyotengo officials said Kimura's funeral would be held Friday. It would be a long procession featuring the military, a brass band, jets flying overhead. Kidding.
That's so disrespectful, Phil. Why would you say that about that man?
What was disrespectful about that? I was just, you know, making up. It would be nice if they did that.
Yeah, it didn't mean no disrespect. They're not like they're going to bust out the jets from some old guy, old fossils going west. Why, the other day...
Never mind, bud. We get it. Mr. Kimura was and will always be a treasure to our town, to our country, and to our world. And as a treasure, we're going to stick him back in the mountain where he came from, said Mayor Yasushi Nakayama as he dug into another box of popcorn. There you go.
Well, I think that's lovely, and a tip of the cap to the wonderful people of Japan, the regimen that they follow, the health regimen, the yogurt, and I do want to get the address of the yogurt manufacturer.
No, I don't know the yogurt. In Georgia?
Yes.
No, I don't know who it is. I'm just saying that they eat a lot of yogurt.
Well, whoever it is and wherever you are, to all the yogurt and to all the people that eat yogurt, and this man, Kimura, didn't eat yogurt. Is that right?
Right.
Well, then...
Never mind.
Yeah, I don't know. Why was I wasting my time?
All right, we'll be right back, folks, here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with more of this scintillating news.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yogurt? I don't agree with it. I think it's ridiculous, okay?
I'm going to talk about it.
David?
Yeah.
David?
Yeah.
So this is a syphilis report. Is that right?
Yeah, this is a syphilis report that we're trying to. In other words, what we want to do is make this as educational as possible, but we don't want to panic people, and we want to, create an atmosphere where we can give people information.
All right, I don't approve of it.
Well, Phil, it's not your call, all right? I've already talked to David about this.
It's not my call. You know, it's a hell of a thing for you to say. It's not my call. It's a hell of a thing for you to say. It's my show. That's what it is. And I think that I should have some say in how these things go about. I mean, there was a number of years... What is it with the music?
Time for the syphilis report.
Hello, everybody. I'm Margaret Gray, and it's time for your syphilis report. Well, guess where syphilis has now reared its ugly head on the big island of Hawaii? This is your syphilis report, but...
Time now on a syphilis report.
Yes, 5 cases of syphilis were reputed... We're going to have to cut that again. I like reputed more than reported, but that doesn't mean the same thing, does it?
No, it doesn't, Ms. Gray. You have to change the thing.
All right.
Turn that off!
Yeah, I knew he wouldn't go for it.
Well, Phil, it's out of your hands. David's already proved it.
Why do we got to hear this jackass music behind this? That's the Benny Hill theme.
On account it relaxes people.
Everything around here is relaxes people. This is what I notice about this show and everything that we do in the show. It's got to relax people. I don't care if we're talking about the death of children, if we're talking about people dying in a tram accident, if we're talking about a terrorist act, everything's got to relax people. So now you've got this syphilis report. Whose idea was that?
It was, excuse me, I was belching. Is that all right?
You don't have to bring it up.
That's cute. Don't have to, write that down, bud.
You're belching, I don't have to bring it up.
yes, I did. It's a belch. What I'm saying is this. Oh, who cares what, just go ahead, bud, please.
Now Margaret Gray.
Hello, everybody, it's the syphilis. What did you do?
I want to know. What is the purpose? I understand it relaxes people, playing that goofball music. Is there all of a sudden a need to talk about syphilis?
Phil, last night on these very airwaves, you were talking about gonorrhea this, gonorrhea that, gonorrhea a book, gonorrhea the sign. Never mind, bud, and so on and so forth.
I was talking about propaganda posters from World War II.
Yes, you were. Well, guess what? Now we're dealing in reality, because as much as those posters may have worried people back in World War Dose, this is very real, Phil. It's a very real concern, and should concern all of us. It should concern all of us parents. Do you have any children in preschool?
No, I do not.
Do you have any children in grade school?
No, my kids are all up and out of the house.
Well, some of us still have children that are in school, and I think this syphilis report could be something that...
What has syphilis got to do with a kid in grade school?
It gets the parents' attention. Bud, go. Hello, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray with today's syphilis report. We've got 5 cases on the big island. How dare you take my news copy from me?
Thank you very much for the syphilis report, Margaret.
I'm not through with you.
Yeah, uh-huh. And you, Bud, you being a part of this.
I didn't mean to. You told me I had to play the music and make sure it relaxed people.
That music doesn't relax anybody.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell you that, man.
What are you talking about? It's funny and everything. Look, here. Ah, boy, I'm solid.
Get out of here. Ah.
It does. It relaxes me.
If he says it relaxes him.
If he says it relaxes him, there's something wrong with it. Hello, everybody. I'm Margaret Gray with the Syphilis Report.
Phil, you turn everything into something ugly. You would show Phil Hendry something that a blind man has worked on his entire life, and he'll lift his leg to it.
No, I will not.
Why did you... That was perfect music, bud.
Yay, Miss Gray, that was great.
Thank you.
Okay, so you got your little shot in. Show Phil something that a blind man has worked on all of his life, and he'll lift his leg to it. And what do you call that?
I call that informing people with a smile. I'm Margaret Gray, and it's time to inform... Bud, get the music. I'm going to show you, Phil. Hi, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray, informing you with a smile. Syphilis.
No. No. Sorry. Not going to work. Not on my watch.
Oh, get a load of you. You're suddenly standing on the West Wall, are you?
Yeah. 1984 book sales are up amid surveillance reports. Now, here you go. This is beautiful. Look, I'm going to tell you this just as my, you know, just my opinion, and I'm not going to go into a big, long song and a dance because I don't even want to talk about it. This whole NSA thing is the biggest load in the history of the universe. It is the most trumped up, most overblown bunch of garbage that has been loaded in and then taken to the street and then dumped that I've ever heard of. And having said that, the country's book buyers are now reading up on being watched. Get a load of this, man. We're talking about something that is being done by the government at the, quite frankly, at the with the approval of the American people through their Congress, the Patriot Act. It's been turned into a political issue because it's all about Obama. Forget about whether Bush was involved in any of this. And I'm not saying that, you know, I want to indict one president over the other. So it's ridiculous. So now people are buying 1984. Apparently, the sales of George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World have been strong since news broke last week that the U.S. government had vast surveillance programs targeting phones and internet records like they've had for years and years and years and years. Several editions of Orwell's 1984 about an all-seeing government were among Amazon.com's top 200 sellers as of Wednesday morning. Huxley's story of a mindless future ranked number 210 and was out of stock. Well, I don't doubt that it's out of stock. That book is always going to sell. A perennial favorite of futuristic horror, Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 was ranked number 75. Of course, Fahrenheit 451 is about a society that burns all of its books, and we don't need the NSA, and we don't need the surveillance program of the NSA to know that people aren't reading books. All you gotta do is go on Facebook, okay? And when you go to Facebook, take a look at people's profiles. Take a look at their likes and their, you know, do you ever do that?
Yes, you can go in and look at their likes and their dislikes and...
Yeah. Okay. And there's always a category for movies, television, and so, and then there's and music, and then there's a category for books. And I'm telling you, you look at the movies and you look at the television, they got 50 million movies and 85 million TV shows, and this, go down to books, they got like maybe two listed, and one of them is bloody damn well Harry Potter.
Well, what are you saying? People aren't reading?
A little bit, yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. And what they do read is garbage. People are reading fiction. You should not read fiction. I am here to tell you.
Now, wait just a minute, Phil.
No, wait. This is my show. This is my editorial opinion. Do not read fiction. I repeat, do not read fiction. 1984, yeah, that's fine. And Brave New World, fantastic. 1984 by Orwell, I've read it three times. The book is about Orwell's take on a post-World War II view that the communist state, the socialist state, was now looming large. It was the golem of civilization, and the West had to stand strong because what it did represent was exactly this kind of totalitarian society, totalitarian-controlled society, where nobody had any personal freedom, where everyone was watched, and where everyone was expected to work like a little worker ant for the greater good. And as you know, that lasted until around 1990. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
What did?
The communist thing, man.
The communist thing, man. Phil, this isn't a beatnik poetry reading.
Phil Hendry.
Famous Bill Hendry Show. I got to we've been looking at this auto race, Bud. Thank you very much for that, Bud. But I don't think we have to look at any more auto racing, do we?
No, that'll take it down.
But thank you. That was the Spanish Grand Prix on Phil TV. Getting back to what we were talking about here, 1984 by Aldous, 1984 by George Orwell is a big seller. People are buying that book. Now, 1984, if you've read it, and I have, is a book about, it's obvious that it's a book about the very worst possible excess and the worst possible repression of a Stalinist, Marxist-Leninist state. What George Orwell foresaw as the worst possible outcome of Great Britain and hence the Western world not being vigilant at keeping this communist onslaught out of Europe. What would happen? It would become a worker bee state, everybody assigned a number, everybody assigned a place to live, everybody given a job, just as the communist system promised, and in the process dehumanizing everyone. And he went even further. He said that not only does it give you the same job and it gives you the same place to live and it gives you, the same things to wear, but also they're going to begin to control your thinking so that we don't have any more of this troublesome counter-revolutionary behavior. And how did he do it? Well, he did it, Orwell did it, in a way that we're doing to ourselves right now. And Orwell didn't do it. He was saying that the society of the future would do it. The society of the future, in Orwell's opinion, would limit words. It would limit words. It would limit the way words were used. It would limit the number of words we could use. It would make words reflective of things that they ordinarily wouldn't be. For instance, in 1984, in this futuristic society, the word love was eliminated from the dictionary, from the English language. There is no word love. Instead, the word replacing it was unhate. So,
what's that mean?
You unhate somebody. Oh, I unhate you.
So, in other words, there's no word love.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, no word love.
Well, I don't know, Phil. When's this supposed to take place?
What do you mean, when's it supposed to take place?
It's in the book. Don't you know what it's saying?
Don't you yell at me.
Well, that's in the book. He's right. It's in the book.
What is?
I'm going to belt you, man. It's in the book 1984. So now you have unhate instead of love. So everything is off of the word hate. Everything's referenced off of that. Then you control history. Notice, history. What's the most dangerous thing in Orwell's future? What's the most dangerous thing in Orwell's future as we open onto this scene, as you open the book up and you begin to read? We see Winston Smith, the hero of this novel, and he's at this meeting, and they're all denouncing the enemy, some made-up guy named Goldstein, you know, nice Jewish name, nice Jewish, terrible guy. And then he goes to work, and what are the things that Winston Smith is doing on behalf of the government in his job there at the Ministry of Bullcrap? It's the propaganda ministry. He's controlling the historical information, and he's making sure that words that should not be used are not used. Now, why is that important? Number one, we think with words. I know we speak with them, but we also think with them. We think with words. And if you limit the number of words that a person has at his disposal, you limit his ability to think about things. Sure, we see pretty pictures in our mind, and we have dreams and all that bullcrap, but when we're sitting and we're pondering and we're thinking, and they've eliminated words, and they don't let us, and now we don't have that word anymore. Maybe our education is such that it's finally sunk in. Now we have a limited ability to think. And then the other thing he was controlling was history. He was eliminating from the newspapers and eliminating from any periodical that he would get there in his little cubicle, anything that the government didn't approve of. They controlled history, controlled information, but more importantly, controlled the history of people and events. That's why history is important. That's why when you hear Americans, especially, forgive me for saying, but younger Americans, but older Americans are the same.
Well, I don't really read history.
So the biggest threat to this country today is not the NSA. The biggest threat to the country today is not the information. It's not Bradley Manning. It's not WikiLeaks. It's not this. The biggest problem with this country, the biggest dictator alive, and the one that's hurting us the most, is that person called the everyday man. It's you and me. We ain't reading. We don't read history. We don't have a vocabulary that's worth a damn. Every other word is F, MF, you know.
Well, you, speak for yourself.
No, not speak for myself. I mean, we are our own worst enemy. We think the government's doing it to us. Give me a break.
Are you telling me the government? They got guys that are going to do black ops and everything like that.
What about black ops?
What about black ops? What are you talking about, man?
Phil, you don't realize the government of the United States of America can observe and look. It can... You know, I'm going to say something that I would ordinarily reserve for you and your little friends here. They could put a microscope right up your... Your butt.
He said butt.
Okay, fine. But you know what? The government and all of the American government, especially in all of its power and might and in all of our paranoia, they haven't got anywhere near the ability to look up our butt that we have with each other. And we're the ones that don't read. We're the ones that don't read history. We're the ones with the crap can vocabularies. We're the ones that don't vote. We're the ones that imagine all of these. I'm telling you, this NSA thing is, it makes me laugh. I laugh myself sick when I read about it because it shows just what a bunch of weak-minded clowns we've become.
Well, you're in big trouble now because you just called your audience weak-minded clowns. Bud, I think you should cue it.
You got it.
Hi, everyone. I'm Margaret Gray. It's time for Syphilis.
Get out of here with the Syphilis Report.
That's clown music.
Get out of here, will you? All right, I'm all done. By the way, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is a book that's probably closer to the future that we're looking at. Because in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, there's a lot of genetic engineering. There's a caste system, and it's enforced by way of this genetic engineering. They have different castes from alpha all the way down to epsilon. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. Okay?
Now, what is that, like fraternities?
No, it ain't fraternities, man.
These are all big people, man, like epsilon, a little tiny guy.
Yes, the alphas are the ones that run the society. The alphas are tall, strong, handsome, really smart. They're the presidents. They're the legislators. They're the brains. They're the ones that run the society. Then you have the betas, and the betas are like the middle management type of people. You know, if an alpha would be, I don't know what an alpha would be because you got to imagine like an Aryan Superman combined with the brains of maybe Albert Einstein. Then you have the betas, and those are the middle management guys. Then the gammas, those become kind of the worker force, the strong kind of cats that, you know, are building freeways, all that crap. Then you have the deltas. Now you're getting down into the deltas are sort of like the secondary manual labor guys who are the worker bees, go to ball games, you know, drink a lot of beer, whatever. And then the epsilons are like the lowest of the low. These are dumbasses that are elevator operators. And, they're picking up garbage by the side of the road, something like that. And this is all enforced from birth because you go into a laboratory and you see growing in these tubes, alphas, epsilon, all of them. Well, the book Brave New World is about one alpha who somehow during the gestation period there in the laboratory, somehow during his growth period as a fetus, too much alcohol was introduced into the system, and his growth is stunted.
Well, is he a little person?
I don't think so. I think he's maybe like 5'5" or 6", but he's an alpha. He has the same brains. He has the same, and he also has the same position, but he sees that he's different, and he's smaller, and he recognizes, and thus begins this thinking in this man. You know, the world becomes clear to him. He sees the people around him. He sees these gammas, these epsilons, these deltas. He realizes that his world is unique. He is a alpha, and he has the brain and the prestige, but he also has the body of like a gamma or a delta.
And this is not a fraternity.
It ain't no fraternity, man. Are you listening to what I'm saying?
What, are you stupid or something, man?
The only gamma that I ever heard about was a bunch of guys there, and they threw up out of a window one time.
But this is not a fraternity.
It's a futuristic world that a man named Aldous Huxley came up with.
Who?
Aldous Huxley.
Who's that?
All right.
Come on, don't do it.
I'm going to kick his ass. Who's that? So in any event, that's the book, Brave New World. Go read it. It's fantastic. And, you know, like that. And they have a, in that book, just like in 1984, there's a, it seems to be a segment of the society that lives sort of on its own and lives in a relatively free manner. Like in 1984, there are the proles. That nobody goes into the prole part of town. That's short for proletariat, because those people can't be controlled. So they get to have their booze. They get to have their sex. They get to go where they want to go. So, but they're contained. Same thing in Brave New World, only they are Native American people. They're the Indians of North America and perhaps some other indigenous people elsewhere who the government doesn't even mess with them. They just let them do their thing because they've got their hands full. And this is where our hero of Brave New World, he escapes to that world. And
well, how does it all wind up?
I'm not telling you. I'm not going to give it away. People have been kicking my ass for giving stuff away over the years. I ain't doing it. But I would recommend that book, Brave New World. That's a kick-ass book. Bud Dickman?
Yes, sir.
Hello, everyone. I'm Phil Hendry, and this is your Brave New World Report. All right, anyway, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, of course, final segment of the program. And don't forget to look at our show log online at philhendryshow.com right after the show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
We've got a story here on the new film Killing Kennedy, and this is the West Wing actor. He's already been in the fictional White House on the West Wing, and now Rob Lowe will be in the real White House as the actor portrays America's 35th president, John F. Kennedy, in National Geographic's upcoming drama Killing Kennedy, as seen in the photo above. And for those of you who are on Phil TV, I'll give you a look here at Rob Lowe as John Kennedy. Well, maybe. I mean, they're making a case here.
Well, they're saying it's uncanny. I wouldn't say that.
No, I wouldn't either. But it's a very good, it's he looks more like Bruce Greenwood's version of Kennedy in that movie. What the hell was it? That lousy 13 Days?
What's that?
Oh, not the Kevin Costner? Oh, that was an abortion. Excuse my language, but it was just, it was a bloody abortion. I that film, 13 Days, it was almost as if there were bloody rubber gloves.
Well, okay, Margaret, I get the point. God.
What's your problem?
The whole image of bloody abortion, I get it.
Did you see it?
Yeah, not only did I see 13 Days, I walked out of it, yes.
You what? Then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 13 Days. I remember Mr. Henry came back and goes, ah, God, what a waste of money.
Right. I did.
So you know what an abortion it was.
Well, can you knock it off with the abortion thing?
Why? You use it.
Yes, I do. But I don't go on to say bloody and rubber gloves.
Oh, boy, what a lightweight. All right. But what the point that I'm making is that this film, 13 Days with Kevin Costner, it was a stool sample. It came right out of the back end of a horse. It was, if you stepped in it, it would be warm and soft.
All right, I can't take it anymore.
Should I go back to abortion?
No, we're all done talking about this movie, 13 Days. Point is, it was a lousy movie. Now, Mr. Greenwood, who played Kennedy, when you look at the Rob Lowe, to me, it looks a little bit more like him. You know, it's a good, I wouldn't say it's uncanny. Give me a break. Who wrote this article? Some of you guys really need to, I don't know what you need to do, man. You need to find some way of writing, you know, interestingly without beating the freaking truth into the ground. This was written by Kimberly whatever the hell, who probably doesn't know Kennedy from, she wouldn't know Kennedy the president from Kennedy the MTV jock. Anyway, so as seen in the photo above, Lowe recreates an iconic pose from JFK's official White House portrait, the one where the president has his arms folded in front of me and he's sort of looking down, pondering all kinds of things. Lowe started production this week in Virginia on the Nat Geo film based on the best-selling book by Bill O'Reilly and Martin Dugard. Boy, I got to tell you something. I'm not going to read. I just don't want to read it, you know.
Well, why wouldn't you? You're into history, I thought.
I am, and I already read On the Trail of the Assassins, and I've already read Team of Rivals, and I don't need to read about Lincoln anymore, especially from the pen of Bill O'Reilly. And you'll pardon me if I don't read somebody else's version of history, not some pop icon like Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, you're just jealous because you didn't write it.
No, I'm not jealous.
Well, not even a little bit.
I don't even, not even interested in writing a book about Kennedy. What do you mean jealous? I don't care. But I got a problem with reading books written by TV hosts. You know, call me crazy.
You read a book by a guy that's, if it was about Bill O'Reilly.
What?
What are you talking about, Bud?
I'm saying that if the book was about Bill O'Reilly, you'd read it.
No, I wouldn't.
If it was written by Bill O'Reilly?
I still wouldn't read it because the guy does, he bores me to tears. So no, I would not read it.
You've got a problem with Bill O'Reilly.
I don't have a problem. I'm saying that I'm not going to read a book, any book at all, written by what I consider to be a guy that is a glorified game show host. That's what I think of these guys. That's what I think of them.
What an insulting... So, in other words, what about Charles Krauthammer?
Charles Krauthammer, he makes his living as a writer. And by that, I mean he is not only writing, he's researching. He is formulating, in my opinion, a considered opinion based upon research and the fact that he has to engage readers, not just jackball sitting in front of a TV tray. So I rank him higher.
You rank him higher than who? Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah.
The man is in a wheelchair and looks as if he's got a pole.
So what if he's in a wheelchair?
Yeah, it's not the same. You can't put Charles Krauthammer.
Joe Krauthammer.
What'd I say?
Cramhammer.
Well, Charles Krauthammer, you can't do that because Mr. O'Reilly would be disrespected.
I could give a sweet you-know-what if Mr. O'Reilly is disrespected. Charles Cramhammer, listen to you.
Oh, God.
Oh, Phil, get over yourself.
What does that mean, get over yourself? I don't...
Just lighten up.
I'm fine. What do you mean, get over yourself?
Yeah, about Charles Cramhammer.
If you say Cramhammer one more time, man, I'm going to show you Cramhammer. You want to see Cramhammer?
That sounds almost like you want to rape me.
Get him out of here before I kick his ass.
Come on, man.
What are you doing? Come on.
So, you drove Bud from the room, huh?
Yeah, and you're next. So, no thank you, I'm not reading the book. Now, moving along here before I throw up. So Rob Lowe is going to play the president in this Nat Geo, if you'll pardon me for using the term Nat Geo. It is kind of shorthand and not very literate, but there you go. Joining the actor in the movie will be Once Upon a Time star...
Who?
Jennifer Goodwin as Jacqueline Kennedy. Michelle Trachtenberg in her first Russian-speaking role as Marina Oswald. And Will Rothar as Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm just kidding. Oswald. The JFK Project is Lowe's second National Geographic Channel project of the year. He also narrated April's miniseries, The 80s, The Decade That Made Us, which will spawn a sequel covering the 1990s. Boy, Rob Lowe is kicking some ass. Killing Kennedy is also Lowe's second big made-for-TV movie of the year, following the HBO Liberace movie Behind the Candelabra. Lowe played real-life plastic surgeon Jack Starts, who not only performed a major makeover on Liberace, but also performed procedures to make the piano superstar's much younger lover look just like Liberace. Wow, that's creepy. So there you have it. You know, I saw a film about Liberace. I saw a movie about Liberace. It was a documentary about Liberace, I should say, and it was about his estate, and it was about the man he was living with at the end of his... Oh, no, it was about Rock Hudson.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, there's a big difference. Sorry, I made a mistake, folks. About Rock Hudson.
Well, go ahead. You just pretend it's Liberace.
No, I won't pretend it's Liberace. It was Rock Hudson.
Well, then...
Here, it's about Rock Hudson.
No, just pretend it's Liberace, folks.
No, it's Rock Hudson. Now we're at the end of the...
Thank God. No one cares about Rock Hudson. People wanted to hear about Lee. Lee Liberace.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Lee at some future date. The Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry, in association with me, Phil Hendry, and all of that. Join us online at philhenryshow.com for our backstage pass and get miles and miles and miles and hours and hours and hours of fantastic listening with your BSP baby. Until tonight at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock on the East Coast, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.